Right, thank you very much. That was a fascinating talk. I'm sure there's plenty of contributions about to come from the floor, so observations or questions? No, you don't want to do this, because otherwise I'll start talking.
Conspiracy of silence.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Interesting talk. I thought your idea about the idea of government institutions, one perceives them as being benign, you're more likely to be interested in the idea of conspiracy. And I think one of the reasons for that is because conspiracy theorists generally tend to be conservative-minded people. The 9/11 truth people, for example, as far as I can tell, almost all of them are. So you've got conspiratorial conservatives, different brands, different types of conservative thought, conspiring against different types of conservative administration. Also, I've had experience of working with disaffected kids, and they all believe in conspiracy theories. And the Illuminati, that kind of thing. The interesting thing about this is, of course, is they're all, of course, completely conservative in their mindset. And they don't believe in social change. They believe that these powerful groups who rule the world, they never talk about even the fantasy of getting rid of them. They're there, they just describe it as they see it, and that's they leave it there. They don't talk about rebellion, there's no way of getting around it. Everything's set up in such a way that it's impenetrable. And so I think that my point is that and one of the reasons why they're very popular at the moment, of course, is in this sort of intellectual dark age we're in, what with computers and YouTube, you can get your answers to the world's problems in your bedroom in a few hours with some nutty videos, and that's exactly what people are doing. So it fills a social need, which could probably be related to the cultural situation where we find ourselves in. And it does appeal to the, like I say, I do believe that they're fundamentally conservative. So we don't need to look for radical content in them because there isn't any in the first place.
Thank you. I mean, I agree pretty much entirely with that. Yes, often these theories have the function of channeling potential disaffection into routes that do not involve any challenge to the current social system. And they have the sort of flavour of radicalism, while, and of course, as I suggested, that a cover-up has a tendency to grow outwards because it doesn't just cover up what it's covering up, but then it has to cover up the fact that there is a cover-up and so on. And as I suggest with the moon landings, it would have had to include the United States and the USSR and so on. Well, if whoever is ruling the world, if the Illuminati effortlessly control like puppets on a string the United States and the Soviet Union and Al-Qaeda and anybody else, well, then it's very easy to think, you can't take them on. It seems it presents the secret world government as being more powerful than any real this worldly government in fact is. Thank you. I agree absolutely.
I just like to add something to what Dennis has said. I came across a conspiracy theory which I hadn't heard of before, maybe 6 months ago, and kind of drew my breath away, and I thought I was quite familiar with sort of conspiracy theories up to that point. And apparently, according to this, of course it involves the Rothschilds, as so many of these do. Apparently, there was a gentleman by the name Karl Marx in the end of the 19th century, and another gentleman whose name I forget, who apparently was the progenitor of Nazism later on, who were both in the employ of the Rothschilds. And the Rothschilds had actually employed both these people, and apparently this is extremely widespread among certain circles, widespread idea, had employed both these people to come up with a political system and worldview, which were in complete contradiction to one another. So at a certain stage in history, once these had manifested, these two worldviews, Nazism and Marxism, as they saw it, Soviet society, would come into conflict. There would be an enormous kind of war from which the Rothschilds would benefit enormously, and it wasn't quite clear how they would do it, but they would do it. So that was the idea. And it struck me that this is a wonderful way not only kind of distracting kind of attention from the state of the world, but also to, for example, to immediately kind of push into the dustbin any sort of anti-American concepts like Marxism, like Nazism, like fascism. So it's actually a very, very conservative view in its very core. So not only does it kind of divert people away from looking at society, but it actually makes an attack on anything that is actually does challenge, or the major forces which are actually challenging American or Western kind of elite ideology at this time.
Clearly preposterous, everyone knows that Karl Marx was a satanist.
The only reason I'm here.
Yes, back there.
In addition to compulsory labor, capitalism exists due to the fact that the people want to force each other into forced labor. And some people wanting more than they want is the second factor that causes the establishment of a class society, including capitalism. What other factors do you think are engaged in the existence of class society, including capitalism?
If there are some contributions, then maybe I'll reply to a kind of block of them rather than having just a dialogue.
Okay. Anyone else? I'm just curious, these conspiracy theories, how many do you think actually put about by those who would have a vested interest in keeping people occupied with these conspiracy theories rather than the real problem? I didn't say that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's just come to me, so it's probably time to jump in the mode. As I said, for workers to be workers, they have to be servants. To be servants, then they have to be humble. And humble people don't have an awful lot of self-esteem. So, if they was to look at the situation they're living in as servants, as being taken, if you like, the chumps, to use the vernacular, they will find that very, very, very painful. And so they don't want to look that way. So there's a kind of an egotistical, moralistic looking, you know, and if you like, a lazy way of looking for somewhere else for their problems. And as you said, you know, if we could get rid of all the nasty people, society would be nice. And I think there's quite an awful lot of that going on. It kind of, it's kind of reverse snobbery. Is that we look at the powerful people being unpowerful. We try, you know, as well, we feel that we're being looked down their noses at. We want to look down their noses at them.
Just a quick question. Are conspiracy theories a good thing in the respect that they encourage people to read and research contemporary history and come to their own conclusions about it? Because to form a conspiracy theory, you have to have an understanding of actual history and understand the different people's view on that history. So it isn't in that respect that good thing.
I'll take
that. Well, maybe slightly to come back to you on that. I mean, in a very vague way, if it gets people asking questions, I suppose it is good. But this whole, I think what the speaker, you know, has described, did you say esotericism? Can I use that? I really like that. That's grand. But I seriously, that kind of mode of thinking is, as we've discussed, actually quite kind of conservative, and it can end up sort of diffusing a lot of potential dissent and a lot of potential inquiry. You know, the approach I tend to take with conspiracy theories is, I tend to try to engage people and encourage them to develop what the late Carl Sagan called the baloney detector, except I use a ruder word beginning with B, but, you know. So, you know, you just approach things from the point of view of Occam's razor, for example, you know, the simplest explanation cuts through and is probably more, you know, the more likely explanation, for example. You know, you look at verifiable things that you can actually back up, you know, with real proof. So, you know, for example, we know there was a cover-up about Watergate, say. And as the speaker said, you know, it did not shake the system to its core. You know, people went, oh, yeah. Oh, they did that, did they? Big whoop kind of thing. And to those of us who have a critical... But if you have a kind of critical view of society, you know, if you are a historical materialist, if you do go into the idea that we live in a class-ridden society, it's kind of not too much of a surprise, is it? And, you know, I think as we've been saying, I don't want to repeat too much, you know, this conspiracism is an inherently kind of conservative with a small c worldview, and so he'll probably end up leading down dead ends, unfortunately.
Anyone else? Anyone new? Just before, just to abuse the chair slightly, when you mentioned things look like Watergate that have been revealed, I mean, in recent years, things about Northern Ireland have been coming up that for ages were right. Part of the conspiracy theory sphere. You know, to blink, you know, that Britain was running death squads, that the UDA was being run by the state. But very recently, the Irish national broadcaster, RTE, found reasonably good evidence that the order to engage in torture went all the way to Whitehall. And the BBC reported it, and it quietly disappeared all over again. It's like, yeah, they're engaged in talk. In fact, they had to my mind, one of the most disgraceful interviews I've ever heard, where a BBC journalist tried to say to a victim of torture, well, there were difficult times, weren't there? You kind of understand. Absolutely incredible, right?
Interesting point, though. I think there's a different magnitude of conspiracy theory. I think those ones, as you say, the Northern Ireland ones, are of a different stripe from the Roswells and the moon landings and the Illuminati. That's just a state doing things that the state does, which we can have verifiable evidence for, we know does happen. Incidentally, it seems to me that conspiracy theorists, generally speaking, are not particularly interested in that kind of stuff. It's too nitty-gritty, but you're quite right, of course. I mean, of course, a lot of the things that Sinn Féin was saying turned out to be true, and we now know that's the case. What I was going to say, in terms of the comrade over there, we talked about, do we think conspiracy theories, could it lead to people researching real history? I mean, you think so, wouldn't you? But I don't think it generally does. I think it's a replacement for... Obviously, it depends on the individual. I mean, but generally speaking, I think the role that it's playing, based upon my experience and hearing it on a daily basis, I would say it's a replacement for reading. I've often said to people, this is the biggest... the conspiracy is a conspiracy to stop people reading. If you can watch a couple of YouTube videos and get all the answers to your life from a couple of hours for some wacky video, you don't need to go to the library. You know, it's a complete waste of time. So it all depends on how one engages with these ideas. But generally speaking, unfortunately... It might be slightly counterintuitive. No, I don't think it has led to or will lead to an upsurge in critical thinking. I think if anything, it's evidently going in the opposite direction.
Do you want to come back to a few of these?
I'm a bit amazed here. Do people really take time on conspiracy theories, whatever it means? I mean, is this a peculiar Western thing? Because I don't know anybody who goes in for this sort of stuff, as far as I'm aware.
And last.
It's pretty widespread, Jack. You know, I mean, there's a lot of it. And not just a Western thing. I mean, now, you know, given the situation in the Middle East, for example, look how a lot of very familiar old anti-Semitic ideas, such as the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, are now, you know, rife in the Middle East. I mean, absolutely rife. You know, you can go to street stalls in Cairo, for example, and get, you know, Arabic translations of that particular text, you know, the one that's supposed to be the plot by the Jews to sort of, you know, take over the world, that kind of thing. And that's come up, you know, obviously, within the very sort of specific context of what's going on in the Middle East, which, you know, I won't derail everything on. Another point I'd like to make is I'd be interested to know what people's views are on the term conspiracy theory itself. I've noticed when I'm trying to talk to people that the term conspiracy theory is used to close down any kind of social analysis whatsoever, you know, any kind of idea that there are stratifications in society. Oh, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. No, I'm not. I've just got a different kind of, you know, view on it than you. But it is very, very specifically used to crack down on that. For example, I've had people call me a conspiracy theorist for suggesting that the invasion of Iraq in 2003 may have been about controlling natural resources and oil. I mean, I've been called a conspiracy theory for that. So then people you don't have to think about that sort of thing. Then you can just consign it out to crackpot conspiracy theorist. It's putting you in the same box as, say, people who don't believe in the moon landings or whatever. So I'll be interested to hear what, you know, people have to say on that potentially.
Maybe I just don't understand what you mean by conspiracy theories. I mean, everyone seems to have a different view. Not in this room.
No.
Right. Paul, come back. Do you want to just pass that back way? We'll start missing out the pitch tins.
We can't miss it much, Joe. Thank you.
The surefire way of spotting the MI5 industry. Right, well, all of these notes going in the box should be very quiet, so I think we can continue.
Yeah. There's one more point.
Yeah, 10.5, conspiracy theories propagate in places where people have time to think about and come up with these things. My friend lives in Cambodia. The population there, they don't care because they're too busy waking up, surviving, eating, and then sleeping to go back to work again. You address a theory to them, and they think, so what? It's the way it is. They're too down to care about anything other than in some ways. But here we've got more time, the luxury of a bit more time to think about these things, and it can take us off in different directions. Good or bad.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
just taking up Rob's point about the invasion of Iraq. I've had a different experience, or I look at it differently from how Rob described it. I think up until that point, when organisations like the SPGB used to put out the idea that wars are caused by disputes over trade routes and natural resources, that was quite a radical idea, and people generally thought it was something else. But since Iraq, I'd say that the average person now has an idea that wars are fought for oil and wars are fought for resources. I think that's thanks to mainly perhaps to Tony Blair and Bush, that idea has now, we've moved on a little bit, and people kind of understand that that's kind of what wars are fought over. It's very, if you ask people in Clapham High School in 2003, why is Iraq being invaded? They'll say because of Saddam Hussein is a bad man. You ask them now, that they tell you because it was over oil. That's what they would say. Now, whether, I know it's more complicated than that, but I mean, that, there's been a clear shift in knowledge and perception. So I think that kind of battle's been won. That's passé now.
Right. Anyone else? Yes.
Yeah, just to reiterate that point of what you guys are saying, though, I think there's also like a danger of just of labeling. So it's like it depends how we define conspiracy theory. And I think it's about disinformation and doing our own research and clearly seeing what's true and what's not true. Like you said, in the case of Iraq, the reason the perception came was because, factual information came out, which led us to understand better what's going on, and that actually changed our perception. So I think there's a danger of just labeling any alternative idea or anybody questioning a certain situation as conspiracy theories. So although I do agree there's a lot of disinformation, but similarly we can take the other approach and be like, oh, you think this happened, you're a conspiracy theorist, just because you have an opposing view. So.
Bill, some of us didn't hear a word what was just said. Any chance it could be summarised on so people would know what the conversation is?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just saying the danger of labelling things. So for example, the definition of conspiracy theory, and oftentimes we define that as having an opposing view. So in the situation of Iraq, because there was new information that was given, we realised what the actual situation was, but for example, I don't know your name, sorry. Over here?
Bob.
Bob, like you said, you know, just because he said it was a war fight for natural resources, automatically some other people were like, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. So I think it's very easy to label things and categorize them in these kind of little segments. And I think there's also like the danger of falling into that trap as well, and just to label everything conspiracy theory, you know, whereas some things are actually true, and we do need to do the research, whether it's the war, the pharmaceutical industry, etc. So.
Anyone else? On the Radio 4, again, very recently, they had a programme about a Russian term, maskirovka, in which they were going on at great length about how the Russians have developed, historically, the art of lying in war, unlike every other country on the planet, apparently. But the current tensions with Russia, there were a lot of focus on the fact that Putin has managed to use disinformation and Russia Today, which promotes a lot of conspiracy theories pointing back towards his enemies as a disinformation tool. And one of the interesting things was that they actually put this to a NATO general who said, oh, no, we can't do things like that. All we can do is suppress things a little and keep the news out. Well, we can't lie as blatantly as Putin can. Right, yes, Rob.
I get, yeah, but they accept when it contradicts, you know, the secrecy they need to carry out these operations, you know. For example, you know, arming and setting up and operating loyalist terrorists in Northern Ireland to kill their opponents, for example. No, I mean, what I was going to say is, I mean, I can give you an example from 17th century English history, if I can, about how you have a conspiracy theory where sometimes, you know, it can be true, but there's still a widespread belief that there are a group that are conspiring to bring down the realm. Catholics and Catholicism. Now, some bunch of Catholics actually really did try to assassinate the king in 1605, and we burn his effigy every year on November the 5th under Guy Fawkes and that conspiracy. So that was a conspiracy that was actually found out and we know is real. However, at the time, and for about a century or so afterwards, there was this idea going around that, you know, within English and later on British society, there is this underground alien religion that's plotting the downfall of the realm, Catholicism. And you can't trust them. They're inherently, you know, whatever, they're inherently bad and want the end of godly society in England. They're always at it. This took the form in the 1670s after the restoration of the Popish plot, you know, and as a sort of reactionary kind of glue to you know, suppress and roll back the gains of the English Revolution. What they're saying is, well, you know, the Papists are everywhere. You know, they're under every bed. You know, yeah. And again, of course, these tropes have gone on. You know, in the 19th and early 20th century, it was the Jews and communists and the Irish, again, bringing the Catholic. Nowadays, of course, it's the Muslims, all Muslims. They're all, yeah, and Jews. Again, you know, they're all conspiring to bring down our sort of society. And it's handy. It creates, you know, enemies within.
And benefit Jews too.
And benefit Jews too, yeah.
Islamic
Jewish.
Just a quick question to the gentleman. Didn't the gunpowder plot lead to a war between England and Spain that lasted for over 100 years? I remember correctly. James I was in the process of negotiating a settlement with the Spanish. As a part of the gunpowder plot, England went to war with the Spanish.
No. No, it certainly wasn't a war, no. No, I mean, historically, of course, there was a rift between England and Spain, you know, as all of us are watching Wolf Hall at the moment know about, you know, Henry VIII divorcing Catherine of Aragon and, you know, setting up the Church of England or whatever. So there was certainly tension. But the Spanish were completely involved in other conflicts, you know, the wars of religion in Europe and attempting in vain to put down the rebellion in what's now the Netherlands. They were far too entrenched in all of that to bother too much about what was going on in England, which at the time was a sort of fairly marginal, insignificant power on the edge of Europe. So no, that's not really accurate, I don't think.
Yes.
This is a different point, really. It might not be conspiracy theories. I might be thinking about what some people might say paranoia. In organisations like the Socialist Party of Britain and other organisations, anti-capitalist and not bring the system down and replace it with a saner one. In We know for a fact that MI5, CIA, various other bodies in different countries infiltrate organisations. There are fake encounters. There's all kinds of machinations in order to either discredit organisations or to divert them in different paths. A lot of those presumed before they're found out to be real conspiracy theories, what people are told they're apparent. Is there anything we can learn from the conspiracies that have been uncovered about how we should organise? Is there a way of organising that makes an organisation somehow not completely immune to this kind of thing, but less vulnerable as far as this time operation?
Yeah,
party like ours where you don't have to infiltrate, you just come along and ask the questions. That's it.
Conversation.
Well, there's no point of infiltrating, there's a blues song that says, "Don't start me talking, I'll tell everything I know."
I do get
that. And that's the socialist party. You want to know something? The only thing we can keep up under lock and key is the membership list. Apart from that, we're going to open a book.
This may be just a trivial side moment, but I've been chatting to quite a lot of people over the last 6 months who are into conspiracy theories, and they all, or not all of them, but a very large number of them, seem to have a religious, or what they would call a spiritual kind of dimension to this as well. Now that may be because I tend to spend a lot of time on American websites rather than the other, but I'm just wondering, you've obviously done a lot of research in this. I'm just wondering if you come across that and whether you would make any connections.
Right, so I think we're good to final few contributions. So anyone who hasn't said anything before, welcome to speak now.
So this is a random question, you're going to answer it, that's the end of the meeting. It's not going to be a second round of questions.
They could be, if you want to keep going. I don't know how long these things normally go on for, but I'm thinking...
It's an hour, Bill, then come on, you've got a whole Sunday.
You have to have mercy on speakers, but yeah, it's some point. But anyway, I'll ask it when we come back on these things after they've had another crack, and then if there are some more, we'll keep going a bit longer. But I think the list of things that you're coming back onto is getting a bit long now, so nice. Unless you had a further question.
Well, I wonder, after the other questions.
Right.
I was going to mention about David Shaler, a strange fish. I went to one of those Truth Commission things many years ago in a friend's meeting house in Houston. David Shaler was talking. And it was at that time where it wasn't necessarily completely clear as to who was behind these conspiracy theories. Because I must admit, I thought that's damn convenient for the friends of the theories. And I think a few of us probably did. But the difference is, of course, that the people who really took the arguments forward for the right wingers. Now, David Shaker, the interesting thing about him was that him and his girlfriend were invited to the SWP's Marxism about 10 years ago. And I can't remember if I was actually there or I listened to it on tape, I can't remember. And she was doing, I think they're both doing the talk, and she said that she was, her and David Shaker were involved with the spying on left groups. And she said that, she described the MI5 office. It was a small room with files, box files. This is in the early 90s. And I think her job she was involved in observing the SWP or something. And she said something which I always thought was quite hilarious, because she said, well, see, MI5 thought the SWP, she was talking to the SWP, and they're all friends now. Well, of course, MI5 thought that the SWP were communists, but obviously, I worked out that you're all right, you're not communist, you're okay. And it was she was trying to ingratiate herself, and it completely fell silent because they thought, hold on a minute, so you're praising us by saying we're not actually dangerous. Which is what she was doing, which is what she thought they wanted to hear, which was quite interesting. So, I mean, if you can take anything that Shaler says seriously, there's possibly a spy in the room right now. I think we should smoke the bugger out. Personally, I think it's Comrade Buick. But yeah,
right, so if you'd like to come back on that, there's many points.
Okay, all of those exhaustively then. Well, thanks very much, Holmes. Lots of really good points raised. I'll just reply to a couple of them. Certainly the term conspiracy theory is used to close down discussion. I mean, that's one reason, again, why I'm not enormously happy using the term. The existence of these very extravagant ideas can then be used to discredit any questioning of anything that you're reading these papers, saying, oh, well, you're on the path that leads you to examining moon landing photographs under a microscope, and so on. And I think one thing, I mean, it's true that as the example from Northern Ireland that was made, that sometimes revelations do come out that particular criminal acts were done by state authorities and were then covered up, and so on. The exposure of them doesn't particularly shake anything. But I think also people who were making those allegations were not necessarily within the bracket of what I'm calling cover-up theorists at the time. If only because that was not their whole argument. If it was Sinn Féin making those allegations, then if it could have been proved to Martin McGuinness's satisfaction that the British state had not operated death squads, I doubt he would then have said, oh, okay, then, well, in that case, I'm wrong, the partition of Ireland is fine, as you were, carry on. You know, the argument is one that goes over without the secret things and the cover-ups and so on. And I would say that's also the same with a Marxist argument against capitalism generally, that you can perfectly satisfactorily show why we need to get rid of capitalism without mentioning things that are done in secret or things that are covered up or whatever. The argument does not rest on those things. Russia that was mentioned, I mean, ideas of this kind are very widespread in Russia. And I think to some idea, I mean, I read Russian and follow things there up to a point. And if you want to get an impression of what the main opposition is like in Russia, not the pro-Western liberal opposition, which is very small, but the opposition that most Russians who don't support the government, what do they support? Then Russia today is trying to create that kind of opposition in the West. The Russia Today formula of conspiracy theories and some left-wing and some far-right, which is the sort of mishmash that you get on Russia Today, is very similar to what Russia's own opposition believes. I tend to think Russia Today is a very crude propaganda operation compared to the BBC. I mean, I find it astonishing how many people in Britain who regard themselves as communists or socialists watch RT. I mean, I suspect the voice from Moscow has never been as attentively listened to on the British left as it is right now. But I think one reason why RT is much less convincing than the BBC is that the presenters on RT know they're spinning a line. They know what their case is and they're trying to put their case across. Presenters on the BBC have hardly ever met anybody who doesn't see the world broadly the way they do and broadly the way their employer does, and they present it as something that's taken for granted. And that's much more effective propaganda. That's slightly as a sidetrack. Issue about the relation between ideas of this kind and of spiritual or cosmic or religious ideas. I mean, I think, as I suggested in the introduction, that the logical structure of these ideas is related to ideas that have a religious origin. In some ways, it fits quite well into that. And that makes it possible, I think, you know, if you're thinking in sort of general terms about the world's all running secret, the world's all this, the world's all that, then in a certain frame of mind you can slide between thinking you're talking about politics and thinking you're talking about something universal. And maybe when you have space aliens and Roswell and so on raising their heads, that's a kind of bridge between the political and the cosmic universal. And you said that's more in the United States than in conspiracy theories here. And I think you are absolutely right, although not distinctively the United States. But I think up to a point, that is a big country ideology phenomenon. The same is true in Russia, in fact. It's possible for somebody living in the middle of the United States to confuse it slightly with the world, and to think that... to think that extraterrestrials exist and they're secretly in contact with Washington is easier to go along with than to think that extraterrestrials exist and they're secretly in communication with David Cameron. I mean, why would they be? And Russia as well is a big enough country that people living there can slightly confuse it with the world, and so the transition from the politics of that country to world, universal, cosmic affairs, I think, goes over a bit more easily in big countries, isolationist countries, than it does in... I mean, maybe Britain is a sort of medium-sized country, but maybe lower mid-table size country. But I don't think anybody would find it very easy to believe that aliens exist and the only people on Earth who know about it are the Captains General of San Marino. You know, it comes to a point where the country is too small for that form of conspiracy theory. So I think probably that does tend to tie in with the United States. Do ideas of this type encourage people to research contemporary history? I suspect only in as much as they encourage people to read more of the same and to be drawn down further and more extravagant developments of the same type, which may very easily then develop into or merge into the sort of anti-Semitism. I mean, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion were mentioned. And in many ways, that is a typical theory of this type, with Jews standing in for Illuminati or whatever. So I'm not at all saying that all conspiracy theorists or cover-up theorists are anti-Semitic. But if you get into that sort of mindset and you then come across the Protocols or that variety of anti-Semitism, it will fit with your existing thinking, and you'll be able to go towards that, whereas maybe under other circumstances not so much. I think that's probably everything I wanted to come back on immediately, so thanks very much. If there's going to be another round, let's ring the bell and round two.
Right. Since I indicated.
Well, it's not so different, but I've read the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, and what's been described is the spread of money commodity relations in Russia. And so something was going on, but what's happened has been misattributed to being the development of capitalism in Russia. It's assumed to be a plot by somebody, and I think this applies generally to lots of conspiracy theories. Nobody's in charge of the world, but people like to assume that, you know, somebody must be behind what's happening in the world. It's a comforting or securitizing, you know, belief. So I mean, I think, you know, that's another reason why people believe. Well, you convinced me actually. I'm going to talk about cover-up theories from, you know, from now on, which brings me to the point that I was going to bring up, and that is this theory that the members of the establishment in Britain have been sexually abusing people, even killing children. And this was the sort of theory that people said that the, you know, Jews did it, and the ones I mean, personally, I think that they won't uncover anything like that in this inquiry. But people believe, or, you know, Danny made the point, I think, people want to discredit the ruling class and say they're evil and so on. Okay, what do you think of this so-called, you know, establishment, so-called cover-up about, you know, murdering people, murdering children?
Anyone else? Yes.
I believe that one. I don't know why, I like it. It could be true, couldn't it? I mean, the people in power, obviously power and sex are connected. And I guess if you take the Jimmy Savile thing, I mean, assuming Jimmy Savile was guilty of these allegations, obviously he never had a chance, he never had his day in court, so to speak. But if we, for the sake of argument, assume that it's basically correct, what has come out from that is that people seem to, that people were even known about it, and if there was a cultural predilection for that stuff to be going on, it clearly wasn't just him, and this was allowed. I think Norman Tebbit said something quite interesting, something about to do with the Leon Britton thing and the file that went missing. He said, I think, I'm going from memory now, what was it? In those days, back in the 80s, the protection of the establishment was what it was all about. If you did know anything, you didn't open your mouth. Well, I thought when I heard him say that, he was talking for himself. He was saying, I know about this stuff, but the bottom line was, maybe he was thinking we're in the middle of a miners' strike or something. You don't go around, you know, throwing stones at this moment in time. You just keep it in-house and ride the storm out. And I think it was the only time I've ever heard him talk, and he didn't seem very confident about what he was saying, or almost apologetic. And he was basically saying, from what I could gather, that this was well known. This conspiracy, which ironically, again, was being led by a right-wing Tory MP, Geoffrey Dickens. Maybe there was something involved in that. Is it so hard to believe? I mean if it was rife within the BBC and rife within the Catholic Church, why would it not be rife within the hallowed halls of Westminster?
One of the things that I observed about bringing into conspiracy theories now rather than conspiracy theories, one of the things that I noticed about a lot of conspiracy theories, or practically all of them, is that they're not just interested in one conspiracy. They're actually interested in the whole kind of gamut of conspiracy theories. You never find one person who might be interested in 9/11 who's not interested in this or all these other things. And it occurred to me to kind of wonder why that might be. And it kind of, again, coming back to this religious thing, I did drive myself almost psychotic over sort of 6 months investigating evangelical Christian sites. And it's like they too are there's a sort of similarity. They too are into sort of like decoding the Bible. They have special access to knowledge. They have wonderful sunsets. If you look at the website, and it's like sunsets. You've got the horsemen of the apocalypse. They have access to this special and secret power that they know something that other people don't. And it just struck me that there's a great sort of sense in which maybe, and I'm speculating, you know, maybe it is just the people who get drawn into that sort of thing. In our world where we are habitually disempowered, it is a way of providing for people a kind of sense of poor importance, that they know something that you don't, and that they have. It's like it's never sort of little conspiracies, it's always big conspiracies, it's always powerful people that are actually involved. And it's a way of almost identifying them.
I mean, I think it's, but in a way, it's kind of
a little secret that's hiding the obvious. You know, I mean, people with power get away with things. People who don't have power can't get away with them. You know, I mean, it's pretty obvious why. You know, and that's why we're all here, because we're trying to end that sort of thing. But it's a lot easier to think, you know, there's some kind of conspiracy going on, and if it wasn't for this, then, you know, like, people in power would be doing the right thing. You know,
a few points. One of my preferred internet wind-ups is to point out that there is a conspiracy at the heart of government. There's a group of people who meet in secret and decide the fate of the nation and engage in immoral, illegal, and all sorts of unsafe activities. And they call themselves the Cabinet.
I knew you were going to say that,
Bill. What is actually true is that what we have is a conspiratorial government. And a lot of what follows on from that, I'd suggest, is people go, well, that's how the government is run at the heart, but what are they really up to? And if they are working as a secretive group already, and we know that, what other secretive groups might there be out there? And just on the Jimmy Savile thing, I think certainly there's a case of this being what G.K. Chesterton said, once you stop believing in God, you believe in anything. So once the official version goes out the window, as people start going, well, I disbelieve what I see in the BBC, I'll start believing anything. Engage in that sort of behaviour.
Although, as a rejoinder to that, of course, it doesn't mean to say that there isn't any extension. If it comes to the... If it is the case that there was a paedophile ring at the heart of the BBC, which perhaps there was, or something going on, it would be naive to assume that... And there's also one in the Catholic Church. It would be naive to assume this may not prevail somewhere else. Of course, it doesn't mean to say throw the baby out of the bathroom to say, well, obviously it's everywhere. But the Cabinet, for example, is a good idea. I mean, I tend to hold sort of small secret conservative idea that politicians, even at that level, generally speaking, are acting within an ideological framework whereby they think they're serving the state. It was interesting, if you go back to Watergate with Michael Heseltine when he resigned, he was alleging all sorts of things, fiddling with minutes, cabinet minutes by Margaret Thatcher, a conspiracy against him. This is all minor stuff. What was interesting was what he said when he resigned. I always remember this as a child. He said it was a privilege to serve the Tory party. He didn't say the government or the state or the nation. He said the Tory party. There are interesting sort of ideological elements to all of this, and to even at that level, for people to even arguing over a helicopter company, to be going out of their way to fiddle with data and fiddle minutes, which I think did happen. I think that was established as well. But that's on you could say a relatively minor issue, which obviously had big implications. So. I don't know if that means what you were saying in terms of a pure conspiracy of people. I mean, are you saying when people are sitting in the cabinet, they're there to oppress the workers in a conscious way? Or I'm sure you're not, by the way. But
just quickly, I think you said Watergate. I assume you mean Westland.
Sorry, Westland.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes, I do apologise for the tape. I meant Westland.
And also the
tape.
I heard on Radio 4, I think it was Malcolm Rifkin talking about when they were. It was a programme about the parliamentary draftsman, and he's saying how they managed to change the name of the bill for the right to buy into the freedom to own or something, just to wind up, or the liberty to own, just to wind up the Labour Party. So we have prima facie example of the Cabinet abusing the offices of state for party political benefit. So yes, it is minor, it is petty, but it's got everything you want from a conspiracy theory. You've got a secret meeting, you've got the abuse of office. It's over something unbelievably minor, but it's, yes, I am being a bit of a wind-up legend. Anyway, is anyone else?
Since you mentioned the Cabinet, the anarchists believe that the Cabinet is the government. It's the CBI or some conspiracy of, you know, the capitalists directly somehow control the government as puppets. So,
which anarchist?
wouldn't say that's a bit of a stretch.
Well, it's an unpublished
it must be true then.
Respond to business.
Respond to, that's, yeah, that's a different thing from actually controlling the room. If there's a social majority in Parliament, the real government will drop the facade and establish a dictatorship. Their argument is that it already is a dictatorship, but the cabinet is just a facade.
Right. Let's not let this one get up too out of hand. But yes.
I mean, look, we know, for example, what we found out subsequently after the last time Harold Wilson was Prime Minister, that there were in fact plans being laid for a kind of Pinochet stroke Francoist kind of coup in this country in the 1970s.
The long line.
Exactly, that kind of thing. But I mean, seriously, they were talking about making Mountbatten the military dictator of this country if things got out of hand. They started to do military exercises, for example, around important places like Heathrow Airport, to demonstrate to the Labour Party in government that they were preparing to do these sorts of things. You know, and they were seriously kind of, on the other hand, you know, there was this conspiracist point of view rife in, say, in MI5, that Wilson was some kind of communist stooge or agent, or he was being blackmailed by his PA, who was really a communist or something. The details escape me. I think, but to get back to what, say, Dave was saying, I think what happens is people mistake the workings of hierarchical organisations and power structures sometimes for this wide conspiracy. You know, the whole thing about historical allegations of child abuse is a perfect example of it. You know, from what I can see, there were probably lots of very bad, horrible things going on in lots of different places which reflect the patriarchal and awful nature of some aspects of our society. It's not that there is this huge, vast, many tentacled, satanic conspiracy to abuse kids by the rich and powerful out there. For example, you know, 9/11 conspiracy people pick up on bits and pieces, whereas if you actually read through things like the 9/11 commission, the official one by the US government, and other things that have come out since, what was happening was a lot of people in the administration and in the American military establishment at the time were covering their arses for this thing happening. I mean, because it was a terrible lapse in national security. You know, according to their own ideology, they're supposed to be protecting American society from these sorts of things. They couldn't do a very basic thing, like control the airspace over New York and Washington, D.C., you know, because all their military posture is in places like Europe and in Korea and facing down, you know, say, threats from China. You know, ever since the end of the Cold War, they completely stood down all the air defences over mainland United States. Because, after all, what conventional military attack would there ever be launched on the mainstream of the United States? You know, I mean, the French could theoretically get a one-carrier battle group off the eastern seaboard, but it would be made pretty short work of if they ever tried to do anything like that, you know. And so you had a lot of people, especially in NORAD, covering their butts. You know, they had hardly any ready fighter aircraft. They sent them out completely the wrong way. And what they were doing was, this isn't part of some conspiracy by the government to let these things through, they were covering their asses. And they're also covering their asses, for example, who gave the order to shoot down a potential shoot down order. You know, all sorts of shenanigans going on there, the incompetence of Rumsfeld and Cheney, you know. And the fact that the American government was running around like headless chickens for about 2 or 3 hours in the immediate aftermath of the attack. They couldn't get hold of Air Force One. You know, the guy who's supposed to be at the pinnacle of this thing was out of contact. You know, they're covering that up. They're covering up their own incompetence, not some plot. Come on, I mean, we've all worked in big organisations, haven't we? Come on, I mean, you know, everyone's seen managers covering their asses for doing things. Why shouldn't that be taken up to high levels? That's all it is. Exactly.
Right. Anyone for anyone? Is this about anarchists?
Yes, it is. Well, this is a quote from Klaus Wahl, right? The British state is supposed to be controlled by the politicians and the politicians elected by us. This, we are told, allows us through the ballot box to change things. So why does the state act in the interest of the ruling class, regardless of whoever is in power, Labour, Tory or Liberal? It's because the function and success of politicians and their parties are ultimately controlled by the capitalists and the state's own permanent officials. So they're suggesting that there's a parallel government. That's what I interpret.
Are they really suggesting that? Are they suggesting that?
Well, they're going to be more. You want more? Okay.
I think the anarchist theme could be a discussion down the pub. Well, I think we are drawing towards the very end of the meeting, so
it's
I'll
only half past four. It's only going to be up to 5 o'clock.
How many are the members of this classical group?
We don't allowed to discuss girls.
We've got about 80 of, I think.
Still they're not representative of all anarchists anyway.
No.
And they're very theoretically light as well.
Yeah.
Proud of it.
Well, before a fight breaks out, they'll do something.
I already have. Is there any more got any more contributions, or shall we go to the wind-up? Okay, it's looking like we've reached the happy point where we can all go and discuss this in several corners. Can I just say, first off, before I ask him to come back on the last few points and say anything else I'd like to wind up with, thank you very much for a collection of £57.50. That's my bar tab paid for.
Hey, I've already got that.
It's Jacqueline's bar tab.
Thanks very much. And thanks again for having me, and it's been a really good discussion. I've enjoyed it, and I hope you have too. You said that you'd driven yourself psychotic reading Christian evangelical sites. I can sympathise up to a point. When I was I on one occasion read 1,000 hymns by Charles Wesley over a weekend. This was when I was working on my book Towards the Science of Belief System. That's a very subtle book plug. You will never see a more subtly worked in book plug than that. Available from all good bookshops and libraries, etc. ISBN number, blah blah blah. But when you're talking about that and linking it to the fact that the conspiracies kind of spread out that people believe in all of them. You use the phrase, I think, about the evangelical sites, that they think they have access to hidden knowledge. And that's precisely a way of saying esotericism. I mean, that's exactly the point of contact between the conspiracy theories or cover-up theories and the world of religion is exactly that. One point that I forgot to come back on from the previous round, possibly slightly a side issue, but about infiltrators or agents from the state, you know who you are. And I suppose the response I'm attempting to give to that would be something along the lines of what you said with reference specifically to the Socialist Party. In other words, what would such an infiltrator want to do? Either to find out your secrets or to act as an agent provocateur and encourage you to do stupid things. And the obvious defence against that is not to have secrets beyond what is absolutely necessary and not to be persuaded to do stupid things if people advocate them. And then you don't even need to speculate, really. They could be advocating stupid things in good faith. But you don't have to be tricked into doing them. Establishment cover-up about child sex abuse. I have no idea what the reality of the situation was or wasn't on this. I'm generally reluctant to base an argument against capitalism or against the ruling class on something that could in principle be correctable without it ceasing to be capitalism and a ruling capitalist class. It's perfectly feasible to have a capitalist establishment that doesn't abuse children. So to that extent I wouldn't want to stress...
How is that possible? Capitalist establishment doesn't.
Well, presumably not every politician is abusing children all the time.
But they go to war.
Well, yes. I mean that, but and that is something that is, I think, not correctable within capitalism. The point that That you made, Adam, that that these ideas present as deliberately caused things that are natural developments or social developments, or in any case, things that are not consciously willed, I think is probably true. And to that extent, it makes these a rather interesting, I suppose, counterpoint to what you often get in the ideology of a ruling class, which is to present social things as natural things. Something like racism presents socially caused differences in the way rewards are allocated and so on as being the result of something natural. So this maybe is slightly different to that. Having said that, I read those Charles Wesley hymns and so on, still there are limits, and so I will refrain from getting drawn into an exegesis of the editorial column from Class War. But no doubt that can be discussed afterwards along with other things. The point that was described as small c conservative is one that I fundamentally agree with. I think the ruling class politicians do in the main believe that what they are doing is the right thing. And that is because, in the main, it is the right thing in terms of the class interest that they represent. There is no level at which they sit around and think, we know the world really is nothing like this, but let's present it. Or, you know, we know this will cause harm, but let's do it because we are wicked and because it will enrich our friends. They believe, as every ruling class through history has done, that what is in their interests is what is good. And I think one of the, perhaps the only surprise of the WikiLeaks cables was that it showed how much the way the people who were being recorded talk in private resembles the way they talk in public. That in fact there are the same cliches, in general, the same ideas, the same vocabulary, because they mostly believe that they are doing the right thing. I'm sure while I was scribbling down notes at some point, I thought of a funny joke or a nice way to wrap it up to finish, but I was so absorbed in listening to everybody's contributions that it's entirely gone out of my head. So I'll have to just thank you again and stop.